live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. This is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
Glad you're with us on this Monday morning for Wisconsin's Morning News. Return on investment. If you're in business circles, it's a buzz phrase, probably too often used.
ROI.
ROI, that's right. What do we earn? What do we get out of spending time, effort, money on a given project? And I want you to keep that in mind as we discuss the following story. WTMJ first to tell you about this on Friday, that a Milwaukee staple for nearly half a century is basically done.
Hi, Al McGuire. It's number six for Al's Run. And the kids of Wisconsin, I are truly grateful for your support.
Oh, so good. I had dug into the archives for a little clip of
that. Good to hear that voice again.
Yes. Children's Wisconsin letting stakeholders know, and stakeholder is another one of those business circle buzzwords. If you sit in a boardroom somewhere, what do our stakeholders need to know about this? But there are people who are invested or connected to a particular cause. Letting people know, Al's Run will not return in its current form. Not this year, not ever. Launched in 1978 by Marquette basketball coaching legend Al McGuire, the event was a super big deal for many, many years. A run on the streets of downtown Milwaukee was sort of novel at the time, but for the Storm the Bastille, which is a fun run. But this was a pretty serious run. Attracted runners from all over, those who were and even some who weren't particularly interested in the cause. Later added a walk and surrounding events to raise money for Children's Hospital, now called Children's Wisconsin. So it started to struggle, and then COVID knocked it out for a couple of years, essentially. It was held virtual two times, I believe, during COVID. Returned in 2022 to the streets of downtown. And then in 23, they just said, we're not doing it this year, and we'll let you know. Well, they've let us know. And it's not going to be back this fall or ever as we know it. Now, a little bit more on as we know it coming up in a moment. But in a communication that I obtained that went out to former team captains, so these are folks who would get the team together. We're running for – Eric's doing a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. You're the lead. We're going to raise a whole bunch of money. And yeah. Folks who wanted to contribute to your fundraising page or whatever. So team captains like that received the communications from the Children's Wisconsin Foundation. They essentially coordinate the event. And it said, I'll pull just this one quote. After a year of listening to ideas from many stakeholders, bing, see, I told you.
There you go, stakeholders.
And beginning our planning, we are looking forward to a brand new event on Saturday, September 13th, 2025. Mark your calendars and make new memories with us next year.
So what's that event?
So we don't know, and that's a little bit of the criticism right now for Children's Wisconsin. Let me first back up and say that people are not happy about this. And while I understand their disappointment, I will defend Children's on this to some degree. Sometimes things just run their course. And a lot of things have changed since Coach McGuire launched this in 78. This used to be a premier event. It was one of the only types of its events in the area. It was unique. You had Al McGuire there, and the McGuire family, I understand, is still involved on some levels with this. But, you know, Coach McGuire's long since passed, and it's lost some of its luster. The landscape has changed. The primary driving force behind this decision, I'm told by multiple sources inside Children's, is ROI, return on investment. You have so many more nonprofit groups that are out there.
Oh, it's a run walk every day, it seems like, every weekend.
You or I or some of the folks who want to do these sort of things could host or MC a run walk both Saturday and Sunday every single weekend through the summer months. Like it's just what happens. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just that's changed.
Yeah.
We have more nonprofit groups. Every one of them has a run walk, and not all of them are the serious run that Al's Run was, but that the pie is only still so big.
Sure.
And so some of that pie has been going to other places. As far as the uniquity.
Go with that.
All right. Inequity.
I'll allow
triple
it.
Word score. You know, the event is no longer exclusively unique. And then you have the higher costs. And you think post-marathon bombing in Boston, post the terrible act in Waukesha with the parade, what it takes now to consider an event like that through downtown streets to be fortified and secured is not what it was even 10 years ago. Those costs have skyrocketed. And so what they were seeing over the years is, in addition to these skyrocketing costs, is lower participation and lower ability to fundraise.
So the juice wasn't worth the squeeze.
That essentially is what I'm hearing from folks inside Children's. And it's, you know, they, there are other reasons that you hold events. And I learned this when I was on the board with Special Olympics Wisconsin for many years. You know, we held a lot of events. And anytime you hold an event that's supposed to be a fundraiser for your cause, you put a lot of people hours into it. You engage with a lot of people. There are other reasons besides how much did we make that you hold events. It's important to people.
Of course. Right.
And I think Children's definitely considered that, which is why they're continuing to do this at all in some form in the future. And it's important to patients and their families, but they want to make it easy on them to participate, and they want it to be a celebration and continue the legacy of Coach McGuire. So if I can be critical, it's you've known this for some time, right? And these, even pre-COVID, it was struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. You didn't have an event last fall. In the time since, you know, to still not have those answers that people are looking for when you let them know, well, we're not doing it this year either. What exactly is that event going to be in the future? It's not going to be a run walk like we know it. Might not be a run walk at all. It doesn't sound like they're leaning in that direction.
That's okay, though. I mean, if they come up with a comprehensive way to raise money, which is the most important thing, to raise awareness, to celebrate and all of that, if that takes some time for them to figure out the best way to do that with a better ROI, then sure.
Right. I think that's it. And I know that folks have an emotional attachment to it. I don't think I ever, I know I'd never participated directly. I know I covered it as a reporter for many years.
Angie and I did it once or twice way back when we were young yuppies.
Yes. And sometimes we talk about this, whatever it is.
It's been 20 years though.
Yes. And so if you're really bent out of shape and want to give Children's a big old hassle about this, when's the last time you took part?
Right.
When's the last time you gave somebody money? Sometimes things run their course. That said, if the event is no longer serving the core mission, you mentioned core mission. What do we do at Children's Wisconsin? We treat kids, and we want to improve their health outcomes. And if it's not serving that, if the return on that investment of all those people power, you know, if you can take the people who are working for the foundation right now, lock them in a room and have them write 20 more grants for funding as opposed to planning, where is the bus going to, is a shuttle bus going to pick up this person and take them? If that's going to result in more money for research and healthier outcomes for children, then maybe that's what you got to do. We don't do change well in Milwaukee. I understand that, right? We just don't.
I don't know what you mean by that. Yes,
but hopefully they come up with something that is the change we need. So that's the story behind that story. .824 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Exciting times ahead in our state. Next time you hear this, that's going to be originating in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers and hosts for the 2025 NFL Draft.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Thank you, Commissioner.
So why is this a bigger deal than NFL analytics and players we've never heard of? You know what I mean? For the common fan not even a football fan, why is this important?
Maybe you care about John Schindelen, linebacker from USC, or this, that, or the other, and you're into the sport. Maybe you don't. But this, they're saying, is going to be the biggest event ever staged in the history of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And that's not hyperbole if you took a look, even glanced at, the draft coverage out of Detroit over this past weekend. Amazing. A sea of people. What did they...
750,000 is one of the numbers I saw them flash on the screen this morning.
750,000 people at one point or another were part of that sea of people there witnessing the draft. It doesn't mean they're all there at the same time. And it also doesn't mean that they all came from far and wide. Many of them are folks, and it has been pointed out that Detroit is a fairly large metro area, so they're locals or from other places in Michigan where folks just came. Maybe you came in for the day. So the idea of where are we going to put 750,000 people in hotels? Hang on. It's going to be okay. We'll find places for people to stay, but this is going to be a massive event.
And it's an all-weekend, all-day event, even though the draft itself is a couple of hours in the evening on some days, a couple of hours on a Saturday. But, like, it's an all-encompassing thing. Like, you don't even have to be there during the actual prime-time coverage of the draft to enjoy the festivities.
Probably were plenty of people who, quote-unquote, went to the draft and never made it anywhere near that stage, right? They were in Detroit, and they were at some bar nearby or some other satellite outfit. And all of these things, like what is that going to be? Where are people going to go in Green Bay are left in partnership with, at least in part, Discover Green Bay. So that's their equivalent of what we call here Visit Milwaukee in Milwaukee. And it's the Visitor and Convention Bureau. Yep. And they had our guy Nick Meisner with Discover Green Bay. He joined us this morning on Wisconsin's Morning News. They had some 2 dozen people, more, almost 3 dozen.
Yeah, I think it was more than that.
In a contingent out there in Detroit to watch and learn.
From my perspective, it was more about how the Visit Detroit, which is the Detroit area CVB, was involved in the process. You know, where were they doing events? Where were they? How were they providing information to visitors? What types of things were they doing? I have the pleasure of meeting some of the folks from Visit Detroit and have been chatting with them for quite a few months now. You can imagine they were pretty busy, so I didn't get a chance to chat with them on site, but we've been in contact with them, along with the CVBs from Cleveland, Kansas City, and, you know, other markets that have had the draft.
One thing I got from speaking with Nick this morning is these other outfits, they like to help each other. This is one thing that they do. It's just a standard courtesy. So you're going to have the places that have hosted this event before help Green Bay. They want to advise them. The NFL is a huge help. The teams that have put this on, despite the fact that we have a rivalry between Green Bay and Detroit on the field, the Detroit Lions apparatus off the field is going to help the Green Bay Packers, who are hosting this as well.
What I didn't ask him that I wish I would have is, because he joined us earlier on the program, was, okay, so for the Visit Detroit, we'll call it that, Visit Detroit, like what is the goal? To make you enjoy your time while you're there, or is the goal to get you to come back? Like, what's their motivation right now in Detroit? Was it to make you have such a good time that you want to come back to see this other event or some museum?
Okay. I'll take your question. Eric, if they have a great time in this event, they're going to want to come back. So our primary mission is to make sure that everything goes great for this event.
We want you to smile while discussing being in Detroit.
And we want our other stakeholders to enjoy return visits by people. And they're our partners in all of this. So even those who are not directly connected to the draft and what happens on stage, the bars, the restaurants, the other hospitality, the other attractions, the museum there, the zoo that's a little bit further north. They call it the new zoo for the longest time. I understand. Why do they still call it new? It's been around for a while. Northeast Wisconsin Zoo. But yes, what are the other attractions? And the hope is that those are great things that either people do visit and want to see again, or are like, boy, I wish we would have gotten over to there. We'll come back. Plus the Green Bay Packers with the Hall of Fame and all the other things that they offer at Lambeau Field. But what we still don't fully know, and neither does Nick with Discover Green Bay, is exactly what that footprint is going to be. What's the stage? What's the apparatus for the main event?
That's one thing that they do want to showcase is the city. I mean, this draft screamed Detroit. Everything from the logo to the people featured on stage to the performers and all of that. And they definitely want this to be a feature of the local community. You know, we've said that this is going to be a year-long commercial for the greater Green Bay region as well as the state of Wisconsin. So the whole state is really going to benefit from this. You know, like I said, people staying all along the east coast of Wisconsin and beyond. So to answer your first question in that series, we do know that it's going to be around the Lambeau Field area. What we don't know is exactly where the stage is going to be, where the draft footprint is going to start and end. That's something that through these next 360-some days, we'll be working with the NFL to figure out.
If you remember, after the Packers won the Super Bowl it was the 2010 season, year was 2011, and then they hosted the opening game, that Thursday night game with the NFL in Green Bay, and there's a big to-do surrounding
that.
There's
a band and everything,
right. Maroon 5 was the band when they were white hot, right? So they set up a big stage on that side of the stadium that faces the practice facility and the arena and all the other stuff. So maybe that's where they put this big stage. You want to make sure that Lambeau Field is the backdrop. You also want to have enough room for people. You're not going to be able to get anywhere near the place with a car. You got to think Lombardi Avenue closed, Oneida Street closed right near there, if you know that area.
At least,
And then you have Titletown, what the Packers have built out on the other side of Lambeau Field as well, which can host events, but that can't be where you have 500,000 people standing and watching the thing. So some of those details, I did think that's interesting. Some of that we still got to work out for Green Bay. And the other thing is, how can the rest of us go? Like, okay, that's great that we're focused on how does the media stand where they stand and where, how do we get the players in and out and how do we get the TV? But if you're just...
What about us?
One of us. Yeah. You know, I'd like to go up there on that Saturday or that Friday. Like, how do we make sure that that's accessible for all of us? so that we can enjoy it. And it's not out of the question. I mean, like, if you were just a family coming into town, like, maybe you stay in Milwaukee, stay at one of our nice hotels downtown. It's only a 2-hour drive, right? If you were staying in some other metro area, you might be, you know, 15 miles from the venue, but it might take you an hour and a half to get there in traffic in an LA or a New York or some of these other places. So what that all is going to look like, we still don't know. We do know this. Green Bay this morning is on the clock for the 2025 draft.
Come on. I still can't believe this actually happened. Well done, by the way, Adam.
Adam Robertson for Pancake today, producing the program.
A couple from Utah. They bought some, like, special boots they wanted to try on from Amazon, ordered the boots, okay, tried a couple of them on, okay, these fit, these don't. All right, put those back in the box, we'll return them. Some people do this quite often. They buy things via Amazon and then return them back through Amazon, whether they drop them off at Kohl's or they go to UPS. And
can you even still do that at Kohl's? That's an important reminder, because that's a barrier of shopping sometimes for me. Like, I still have something that I bought that I need to return to Amazon. I don't really know how to do that.
Well, I can help you with that.
Lots of people do it every day. I know. I can figure it out. Don't help me here on the text line. Thank you.
Just make sure your cat isn't in the same room as you package up whatever you bought. And here's why. Because this couple in Utah, they put all their stuff back in the box, sent it away, then noticed that Galena, their cat, was nowhere to be found. Well, what happened to the cat? 6 days later, a vet calls from California saying, hey, we were just given this cat. We just chipped it or did the scan on the chip, and it's yours. We have Galena here in California. The cat climbed into their box before they taped it up and then sent it away.
So cats love boxes. Anybody who has a cat knows, like, you know, you can, right, kind of like kids sometimes, the toy that came in the box.
Who cares,
The box, meow, meow.
But that's the part I have a hard time believing. Like, how in the world do you not hear a cat in a box? Like, they're scratching, they're clawing, they're making sounds. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and you have to kind of manipulate the box around. And
hear it at
your
all?
Tape, that packing tape.
Right?
And the cat just, what, was asleep?
So, no, the cat, a little dehydrated, didn't eat much, but they believe that the venting of the box, because the box wasn't, like, sealed tight perfectly, helped keep it alive because she was able to breathe.
Oh, Galena the cat.
Yeah, so now Galena's back home. But a couple of reminders here. One of them, make sure you chip your cat. The other one would be, make sure you check the box before you send it out.
Earlier, the WTMJ talk and text line says the cat's new name is Puss in Boots.
Hey, there you go, everybody.
8:42 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
A star-studded affair at the White House this past weekend.
I'm just in it for the jokes.
Yeah, me
too. And they were pretty good this year.
Me too. It was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So this happens every year where most of the networks and those who cover the White House on a daily basis all join together and have dinner and party and dress up super nice and have an event at the White House.
And traditionally, the president, regardless of party, comes in and allows people to make fun of him.
Yeah, there's some teasing and whatnot. Yep, they call it nerd prom. They kind of try to make fun of themselves a little bit. Kind of take themselves a little too seriously for half a minute.
But
anyway, so yeah, President Biden was there. He spoke.
It's been a year since I delivered this speech, and my wife Jill was with me tonight, was worried how I do. I told her, don't worry. Just like riding a bike. She says, that's what I'm worried about.
Hey, everybody there.
All right.
He did poke fun at his predecessor and current challenger, former President Donald Trump. He made fun of him for trying to sell Bibles.
And he got to the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. That's when he put it down and said, this book's not for me.
Zing.
Zing. Pow,
let's see. He also gave a toast to the free press.
To a free press. To an informed citizenry, to an America where freedom and democracy endure, God bless America.
So then Colin Jost came on. You may recognize the name. He does the Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
But it's not easy following President Biden. I mean, it's not always easy following what he's saying.
Okay. And right out of the gate, going for it.
And I am honored to be here hosting what is, according to swing state polls, the final White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Because if you remember, Donald Trump, not a big fan of the Correspondents' Dinner.
I can't remember if he did one and then put an end to it.
He stopped showing up. Yeah, I don't know if he was.
He didn't
going
like
wrong.
It when he used to attend, or at least the one time he attended, right? As a guest, and he got made fun of.
In fact,
he didn't care for that.
There's been a lot of. There was always some theory that the reason he actually ran for president was because he was upset at what Obama was saying about him, because Obama kind of was roasting him a little bit while he was there. This is back in like 2011.
Right. And Seth Meyers was a part of that one. He might have been the host, because I've interviewed Seth multiple times, and he always says, I take some of the blame for bringing you President Trump, because I was a part of that.
More from Joe's.
Like many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV.
Shots.
Yes,
my weekend update co-anchor Michael Che was going to join me here tonight, but in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
Snap. A little bit for some GOP members.
We are all here tonight at Nerd Prom. Well, Matt Gaetz is at regular prom, but... I actually thought I saw Matt Gaetz here tonight, but it was actually just my own reflection in a spoon.
That's
good. He was killing.
He went for former President Trump, too.
I'll be honest with you. I don't have a lot of time. I need to get back to New York because I'm juror number 5 on a big trial.
Okay. And then here, I'll wrap it up with this one.
We are all here tonight.
You've already heard that one. Here we go.
But before I begin tonight, can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, all rise. And I would like to point out, it's after 10 p.m. Sleepy Joe is still awake. While Donald Trump has spent the past week falling asleep in court every morning. So Fox News said he was just being anti-woke.
And there he is.
See, you get it?
There you have it.
WTMJ forecast brought to you by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. High of 70 degrees today. We will have to deal with some scattered showers, maybe a little bit more on the isolated side this afternoon. And then tonight, partly cloudy, low of 47. Clear it out for tomorrow, 67 degrees under mostly sunny skies.
Protesting still taking place at universities across the country over the weekend. And today, the UW-Madison Dean of Students is warning students on campus, hey, please make sure you understand our protest policies, because today there is expected to be a demonstration at UW and also here at UW-Milwaukee. Journal Sentinel says state rules ban people from camping on university land. So if tents go up, they will be taken down per the rules. At least that's what you would anticipate just from the warning that the dean sent out on Friday.
That's the important question, is how aggressively will they enforce the rules that are on the books? Do they have to? Or are you going to have there's a long tradition of protesting in Madison and UW campuses in general. So I think if they're going to get a fair shake to say what they have to say and to do their free speech. But when you start violating the rules, at what point do they say, all right, we're sending in who? Campus police, Madison police, other folks? Like,
if you disobey university protest policies and rules, it can and will have consequences both within our code of student conduct and more broadly under Wisconsin law. That from the university.
Saw some protesters tangling now with police in multiple campuses across the country. And I think if you ask anybody in law enforcement, that's the last thing they want.
Death, taxes, and protesters tangling with law enforcement.
Right. I don't want to be going in there and arresting teenagers and 20-somethings. Because they won't move. At the same token, when things get violent, you have to shut that down. Yeah. And also, you have to be considerate for the other people on campus, some of whom may, I don't want to say they don't care, but may not be interested in protesting one way or another. They just want to go to school. And you have to protect their ability to do that as well.
It's been interesting, too. Some of the stories and what they've been following, just the media coverage of just the fact that this is not unique to our country. There have been campus protests for a long time. They kind of ebb and flow over the years. But here we are. We're in a moment again right now.